This is The Guardian.
I'm Noor Haider, coming to you from Gadigal land, and this is The Full Story. Over 30 years ago, Karen Middleton walked into Old Parliament House in Canberra as a cadet journalist, unsure if politics was her thing.
Bob Hawke was Prime Minister when I first started. He was kind of terrifying for a young journalist. He was always known for being kind of intimidating.
In the years since, she's covered 9 Prime Ministers, reporting for outlets including The Saturday Paper and SBS.
The influence of social media has changed the way we report on politics, the way people get their information and the way they think about it.
And she's written 2 books, one of which is a biography on the now Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese.
Certainly there are challenges for him ahead of the next federal election, which we're suddenly talking about it again, and I think he and the government are very, very focused on that.
Today, Guardian Australia's new political editor, Karen Middleton. It's Thursday, the 21st of March.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome to The Guardian and to Full Story, Karen.
Thanks, Noor.
You've now been covering Australian politics for a long time. I was hoping you could take us back to the day you first walked into the press gallery.
It was a long time ago, a very long time ago. It worries me how long ago it was. I was a cadet at the Canberra Times and I went into the press gallery for the first time in 1987 when I was 20, I confess. And it was an election year and it was part of our cadet rotation. So we were very fortunate at the Canberra Times. It was a little bit like a big country paper but plonked in a capital city. So we had a lot of access to interesting things to do, and one of our rotations was Parliament House. So it was quite intimidating. I was upset about the prospect of covering politics, didn't love it.
Right.
I didn't think it was going to be great. So it's, you know, it's funny how things turn out, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I take it you do enjoy it, given you're here all these years later.
Still here. So I reckon, yep, I must have found something to love in there somewhere. And I did, you know, look, it was a fascinating mix of sort of policy and getting to see how important decisions were made and the impact of them on the Australian people and the dynamic within Parliament, how people interact, the use and sometimes abuse of power. So the mixture of the influence of people and the impact of important policy was quite intoxicating. And yep, here I am, still here.
And you've seen many politicians and many prime ministers come and go over the years. Can you tell me a little bit about some of the bigger moments that you've witnessed up close?
And I want to thank the Australian people. And I give this pledge at the beginning of the third Hawke Labor government.
Well, Bob Hawke was prime minister when I first started. He was kind of terrifying for a young journalist.
This will be a government for all Australians. Not only for those.
He was always known for being kind of intimidating, so it took a long time to actually ask my first question at a press conference, and you had to brace yourself for being monstered, which wasn't great. When I first started, the AIDS epidemic was big. There was huge debate about how to manage that. It was a huge national health issue. That we moved up the hill to the new Parliament House that was, you know, new and exciting and enormous. Doesn't feel quite so enormous these days. I remember when the Tiananmen Square issue happened in 1989, the enormous impact that had, the emotion of the Prime Minister, the government being consumed by how to respond to that. So there were a whole lot of things. And then, of course, over the years, many, many more with different prime ministers and leadership challenges. And it didn't take long once we moved up the hill for there to be the first one of those on the coalition side that have been pivotal moments in politics, moments where you really realise at the time that this is an enormous thing happening that will have an impact on the country.
Can you tell me a little bit about how things have changed, particularly when it comes to the way that journalists and the media engage with politicians in Canberra?
I think one of the biggest things has been development of digital technology. Everything is faster than it used to be. The appetite is voracious for content. That naturally affects the way you work because you don't have time to gather, you don't have as much time to gather as you used to, and you have to move fast. And I think what that does to the way we cover politics is that things get left behind quickly. We cover them as best we can, but then we have to move on to the next thing. And sometimes it's worth stopping and digging in a little bit more. And I think sometimes we lose a little bit of that just for the sheer necessity of going to the next issue and making sure we are faithfully covering that. And political leaders know that, and they can take advantage of that by constantly producing content, you know, opening the bottom drawer and throwing out whatever might distract us if they don't want us to look too hard for something else. So we have to be alert to that, I think.
Karen, I want to ask you about women in politics. The culture at Parliament House and sexism have been dominant topics over recent years. I was hoping to get your reflections on the pace of progress when it comes to that.
A lot has changed. There are many more women in this building now than used to be and in more senior positions, and that's a great thing, and it naturally has an impact on the way the place operates. There are more women in the press gallery in senior positions and more women in political parties and in Parliament itself and among the staff. But not everything has changed. And I think one of the things that made me sad, Noor, over the last few years since we've seen the resurgence of the debate about behaviours in this building is that not everything has changed. I had hoped that the younger women coming on in the press gallery were not experiencing the same kinds of things that we did as young women. But that's clearly not been the case. There have been terrible examples of harassment, bullying, intimidation and, you know, worse that we've seen laid out in the Jenkins review of the way this workplace functions. And so we have a long way to go. And I think it's also a bit disappointing that although the Parliament has agreed it needs to change the way it works and there are steps in train as a result of that Jenkins process to deal with that, it's taking a long time. So there seems to be the goodwill on the face of it, but they're taking a long time to actually implement some very important measures that might see more than just a small incremental change. And I think we'd like to see that speed along.
Amongst the jobs that you've held over the years, you've written a biography of the man who's now the country's Prime Minister.
Yeah, who would have thought of it? I didn't think he'd be Prime Minister at the time I wrote it, I confess.
And how do you assess how his time in that job has been so far?
I think it's been a bit mixed. You know, I think he began with great promise and optimism.
Tonight, the Australian people have voted for change.
What generally happens in our democracy is that people get tired of the government that they have, and the old saying is that they vote a government out, they don't vote a new one in. So there's often a sense when a government changes of, well, it's the new broom, a new person, great optimism, what can they do? And that always comes off a little. And I think we've seen that in the last year or so with a number of things that the government has faced and the Prime Minister has faced a lot of pressure over the cost of living because of the state of the economy. Some of that within the Australian government's control, previous and current government, and some of it much beyond. And so they've had to manage that. And then they've had a number of issues that the Prime Minister had personally committed himself to, including the Indigenous voice to Parliament, that locked him in. And that was not successful for him, I think, politically or in policy terms. They got stung by that. They've taken a long time to regroup on that issue in particular. And there have been a number of other things that have been politically difficult, not least the immigration detention issue, which we saw emerge at the end of last year and is still a problem for the government. So I think Anthony Albanese is still engaging the population. The polls tell us he's still favoured as Prime Minister over his main rival, Peter Dutton from the Liberal Party. But certainly there are challenges for him ahead of the next federal election, which appears to be rapidly approaching. And I think he and the government are very, very focused now on that election coming up.
And what about Peter Dutton then? You would have seen him climb through the ranks of the Liberal Party to become opposition leader now.
It's always a huge challenge for a leader when a party loses office and is very damaged, and they always are, to step into the role of opposition leader. We always say it's the hardest job in politics, and I think it probably is, and to undertake that regrouping and reunification. That is the primary challenge for any opposition leader, and that has been the case for Peter Dutton. Now, he is well known as a conservative in the coalition ranks, so there's been natural tension and apprehension, I think, among moderates or between moderates and conservatives about the direction the party might take. Certainly, I think the conservatives had a lot of influence under Scott Morrison as well, and I think we still see some of that tension that hasn't been resolved. We saw it play out in South Australia very, you know, recently, just a few days ago, in the Senate pre-selection battle, where prominent moderate Anne Rustin, who's a frontbencher and highly accomplished, was bounced for the top position on the Senate ticket by Alex Antic, a far more conservative man. And so that tells you there are still these tensions within the coalition that are unresolved. So Peter Dutton has a big challenge. He's got to present as a unified alternative government that is worthy of consideration for re-election when the public decides they've had enough of the current mob. And he's got to come up with policies and not just political rhetoric. And I think that is a big challenge for the coalition at the moment. That's where the pressure is starting to come on them. Well, that's all very well. You've successfully wrong-footed the government on a number of issues, but what are you going to do? And that's what we will be asking a lot in the lead-up to the election.
We'll be right back.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Karen, I won't be making you, you know, predict when the next election might be, but let's look at some of those policy issues that might dominate the next election. What do you see as some of the big ones that will carry through over the next sort of 12 months or so?
I think the cost of living will still be a huge issue in the lead up to the next election. It's due by the first half of next year. So, you know, we're always looking at the calendar and the clock and trying to anticipate when a Prime Minister might go. No Prime Minister likes to cut short their time in, or risk cutting short their time in office. Equally, they always want to go when they think they can win. So there are those two imperatives crashing to each other. I think the government will be trying to tailor its coming budget, and whether or not they have another one before the election is also a question, to to try and see the pressures on the cost of living easing off. They want those things to be tapering in a downward direction. They want interest rates to be falling, inflation to be falling, people to be feeling more comfortable as well as actually being more comfortable, so that there is a sense of stability in the economy, and that would, they would hope, reinforce their position as a viable government for a second term. Mm. So I think cost of living will be huge. I think the issue of character, Noor, is going to be important, and we've seen that again this week. I think the Labor government had for a long time assumed that because Peter Dutton had been a somewhat controversial figure in, when he was in government and still in opposition and unpopular, certainly relative to Anthony Albanese, that maybe he was unelectable. I think that's always a foolish thing to assume. But I think they are trying to exacerbate the unpopularity and turn that into a lack of trust among voters.
And he always engages in politics, never in providing real solutions. Only politics as usual from a guy who has nothing positive to offer Australia.
On the other side, Peter Dutton is clearly trying to take some of the shine off the Prime Minister's reputation and tell voters that this guy is not the guy you thought you were getting.
Mm.
And a lot of Australians are just asking themselves at the moment, where did Anthony Albanese go that I voted for in 2022? He's a completely different bloke and a shadow of his former self.
He's had some assistance in that campaign through the government changing its policy on the tax cuts, the Prime Minister being seen to have broken a promise.
Well, I think it's just a major break of trust. It's a betrayal. And the Prime Minister promised this on over 100 occasions. I just think most Australians don't want a Prime Minister who looks them in the eye, tells them one thing, and then does completely the opposite.
Every time something like that happens from now on, every time there is something that the Coalition will be able to say the government is doing differently to what it said it might do, and you might start to hear that same argument on religious discrimination, I think we already are, then they will try to parlay that into an issue about the Prime Minister's character. Because character issues are quite potent. Mm. You know, we all know reputations take a long time to build, trust takes a long time to build, but it can be lost very quickly. And once it's lost, it's hard to regain. So if you can undermine the public's confidence in a leader, then you're helping your own case in terms of becoming the alternative. And I think we'll see that debate very strongly. Mm. And then, of course, we're going to have sort of international issues, some of which will be beyond the government's control. You know, the relationship with China is a huge question and its ambitions. What happens in the United States with the presidential election, the volatility of that debate and the outspokenness of the Republican candidate, Donald Trump, all of these things can create a domestic headache, politically speaking, for a government. Mm. So I think it's going to be a very interesting lead up to the election on a number of levels, with a whole range of quite diverse issues that the government will have to manage and that the opposition will be looking for opportunities on to put itself forward.
Staying on Trump, what do you think will be the ramifications for Australia if he returns to the White House?
Well, it's very hard to know, but, you know, we are reminded even, you know, this week of the unpredictability of Donald Trump in the comments he's now made about Kevin Rudd when he was asked about Kevin Rudd, Australia's ambassador in Washington, made disparaging remarks, albeit saying he really doesn't know him at all, but indicating that, well, if he's not a good guy, I'll get rid of him.
He won't be there long if that's the case. I don't know much about him. I heard he was a little bit nasty. I hear he's not the brightest bulb. But I don't know much about him. But if he's at all hostile, he will not be there long.
We don't know what will happen if Donald Trump is president. And we saw a bit of it last time. But I think there's a sense that if he's re-elected, it will be that and then some. Mm. And that is the case in global terms, but it's also the case in terms of bilateral relationships. And some of the givens in Australia's bilateral relationship with the United States can't necessarily be taken for granted as readily with as volatile a personality as Donald Trump back in the White House. And, you know, who we have in charge does matter. The values of the people we have in charge, their capability, their competence, their administrative ability, their ideas, it always matters. So, yes, all the people around them matter and the influence they have and the broad ideas of the parties that they represent are very important, but the individual is important too. And I do think that that is a huge question mark going forward about Australia's relationship with the US, about Australia's traditional allied ties, and about China and what happens in the region, about Russia, about the Middle East. Everything's on the table if there's a change in the United States. Equally, if President Biden is re-elected, there are still economic issues and there are problems in the United States that remain unresolved that could potentially still have an impact on Australia, particularly economically. So it's always important what happens in the United States, and we are at a real pivot point, I think, there in that relationship.
Mm. Karen, we saw quite a divisive voice referendum campaign. The debate was flooded with misinformation and in some cases lies. Is that the sort of debate we should be bracing for as we head into a general election? Is that how politics is played nowadays?
Unfortunately, yes, I think so. I think both misinformation, which is the sort of purveying of just false information, not maliciously, but just by misunderstanding, and disinformation, which is the active purveying of fake information with malicious intent, are huge issues in politics, in democracies and in other kinds of political systems. So we here in our system face an enormous challenge in trying to combat that. And those of us working in the media are very acutely aware of it. The rise of social media, the influence of social media has changed the way we report on politics, the way people get their information and the way they think about it. You know, the absence of critical thinking is a great frustration, I think, for everyone who works in the political domain. And the speed with which messages can travel is incredible. We've seen in previous elections, I think, you know, going back recently, say to 2019, the suggestion that false arguments were put. Labor was accused of a Medi-Scare campaign where it was exaggerating what the coalition would do and then able to disseminate that online. Equally, the coalition were able to push the suggestion that some of Labor's more controversial tax proposals amounted to effectively a death tax. And what then happens is, you know, advertising online is very cheap, targeting is very easy, the algorithms help political parties narrow cast to particular groups who might be susceptible to certain ideas or to triggers. They can push out information that's not necessarily truthful or that it is exaggerated or that places unfair emphasis on one thing or another. And those of us working in the broad political world may not even see it. In the case of a number of those campaigns, you know, we didn't, because they were being pushed out to people's direct social media feeds, people in certain demographic groups, people in certain areas. And messages spread in a viral manner. And so, you know, I think those of us trying to report faithfully on politics, explain things to people, have a huge struggle and challenge to combat those kinds of ideas. We all know how gossip works. People pass on interesting tidbits of information as if they're true and they become suddenly like fact. And, you know, the challenge for those of us in journalism is to try and patiently and carefully and clearly explain what is truth in as far as we can tell and what isn't. And I think we will see coming up to the next election the use and abuse of particularly digital media platforms and those kinds of contentious ideas, inflammatory ideas, to advantage various individuals and parties in politics. And it's certainly one of the things we have to focus on most, I think.
And at the same time, we know that there is growing cynicism and distrust of establishment and the media. How do you see your job as political editor at The Guardian now in helping people wade through all of that and make sense of politics and the world around them?
Well, trust is everything, isn't it? Trust in politics is everything. We so often express frustration that people don't trust institutions, individuals anymore. And we've seen that right across the community, from banks and churches to politicians to media. There's a lack of trust problem, and we have to grapple with that in media. And people do look to us for what we think, and I know that. But I think they also look to us for what we know. This is what's happening. This is what might happen. This is what it means. And I think that's what we have to focus on most, because then what we know is what they know, and that helps them make their decisions in a democracy like this one.
Karen, it's been great chatting to you, and I'm looking forward to having you back on Full Story throughout the year.
Thanks for having me, Nora. It's great to be at The Guardian. I am looking forward to this challenge too.
Thank you. That was Karen Middleton, Guardian Australia's new political editor. You'll be able to read her reporting and analysis on theguardian.com. That's it for today. This episode was produced by Krishma Luthria and Alison Chan. Sound design and mixing by Miles Martignoni. The executive producer of Full Story is Hannah Parks. If you like this episode, don't forget to subscribe or follow Full Story wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also leave a review. I'm Nord Haydad. Catch you next time.
Brought to you by Lexus. Some things do more than their stated functions, because exceptional things inspire you to do exceptional things. To this select list, we add the all-new Lexus GX. With its exceptional capability, you'll see possibilities you never knew existed, sending you far outside your comfort zone. But as much as the GX challenges you, it also spoils you. Its intuitive technology and luxurious features mean that wherever you go, you'll never go without. Live up to it. The all-new Lexus GX.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.